Welcome to Audio Notes. I'm David Finkel, Artistic Director of Music at Menlo. Along with Artistic Co-Director Wu Han, Artistic Administrator Patrick Castillo, and some of this season's festival artists, it is my pleasure to introduce you to Music at Menlo's 2010 season, Maps and Legends. In 2004, the festival's second season, we embarked on a musical odyssey with stops in five singular musical regions. This season, we expand on that journey to explore music from a spectrum of remarkable times and places, from the rich musical traditions of Vienna, England, and Spain, to Dvorak's America, 1920s Paris, and beyond. Maps and Legends will offer listeners many layers of context in which to engage with a broad spectrum of great music. This season's audio notes are designed to illuminate some of these layers. Over the course of this summer's concerts, encounters, and other festival events, we'll only continue to discover more of the innumerable connections that make the chamber music literature so rich. One of the many exceptional qualities that music has demonstrated throughout history is its capacity to act as an agent of cross-cultural exchange. This first installment of Audio Notes 2010 takes us through three of this summer's programs which demonstrate this phenomenon in different ways. Concert Program 1, The Seasons, pairs two composers who occupy vastly different worlds, the Italian Baroque and the modern American avant-garde, but whose music finds common inspiration in nature and the changing of the seasons. This summer's sixth concert program, Spanish Inspirations, looks at the influence that Spain's composers had on their counterparts elsewhere throughout Europe during the early 20th century. Finally, the season ends in Dvorak's America, where we'll hear the folk songs and spirituals that the Czech romantic Antonín Dvořák discovered upon traveling to the United States in 1892, as well as two of his own signature chamber works inspired by the tunes that he heard. The season's final program looks at one of Western music's most celebrated cultural exchanges. In 1891, the Czech romantic composer Antonín Dvořák received an invitation from Jeanette Thurber, president of the newly founded National Conservatory in New York, to come to America. The 50-year-old Dvořák had by this time achieved great renown, not only as one of his generation's most original composers, but particularly as a champion of the music of his native Czechoslovakia. Pieces like the Opus 90 Dumky Trio integrated traditional Czech folk styles with the Western classical idiom and had met with great success. Meanwhile, America's nascent classical music community was experiencing an identity crisis. Young American composers would study abroad and come back writing music imitative of Brahms, Wagner, and other European composers. A distinctly American musical language had yet to emerge. Enter Dvořák. On the strength of his reputation as a great nationalist composer, Dvořák was invited by Thurber to serve as the National Conservatory's artistic director. Thurber hoped that Dvořák would lead by example and guide America's composers in discovering their own national language. Dvořák accepted the invitation, came to America, and studiously absorbed all that he heard: African-American spirituals, traditional Native American music, and other American folk styles of the day. The 3 years that Dvořák spent in the United States produced some of the most beloved works in the repertoire. This summer, Music at Menlo's festival season comes to a conclusion in Dvořák's America.
The program begins with Dvorak's string quartet in F major, opus 96, and closes with the opus 97 string quintet in E flat major. Both pieces are nicknamed American. Dvorak composed both works in the summer of 1893, following his first year as director of the National Conservatory. Dvorak composed both works very quickly. He began work on the American quartet on June 8, and had sketched the entire work just 3 days later. Dvorak wrote in the autograph score, "Thanks be to the Lord God, I am satisfied, it went quickly." Dvorak completed the quartet less than 2 weeks later, on June 23, and proceeded immediately to the American quintet, which was finished on August 1.
The American quartet has been cherished by generations of music lovers for its beguiling evocation of the Midwestern countryside. The quartet is in F major, the traditionally pastoral key of Beethoven's Sixth Symphony and other musical depictions of rural scenes. Part of this music's folksy charm also comes from its use of the pentatonic scale, a set of five notes characteristic of much of the world's folk music. The first movement's gregarious opening theme, introduced by the viola against the shimmering texture in the violins, dances gleefully around this scale. The first violin presents the limpid second theme, also based on the pentatonic scale. But what makes Dvorak's music what it is, and what has made the American Quartet one of the most popular works of all time, is not simply the composer's use of such charming, folk-like melodies, but the imaginative things that he does with them. Listen, for example, in the development section, to how Dvorak turns the movement's idyllic melodies into romantic Sturm und Drang.
So, we have probably the greatest Czech composer, certainly of his generation, if not ever, writing a piece called The American Quartet. Can you explain the American-ness of this piece?
The American-ness, for me, is predominantly in the slow movement.
Jupiter String Quartet cellist Daniel McDonough.
I mean, a lot of people hear America through the whole quartet, and I think what you hear mostly, especially in the outer movements, is like this exuberance and this freshness that he was probably feeling coming to this country and traveling across the Midwest in a train. I mean, there's this spirit of America, I think, that you hear. But the actual music of America, and I guess by that I mean Native American music and African American music, I think is predominantly heard in the slow movement, which is quite beautiful in a very simple, using pentatonic harmony and scale, and just kind of a duet with simple accompaniment, very vocal music. Thank you. And the rest of it, I feel, has a lot of bohemia in it, actually. It's got America's freshness and youthfulness, but it has also some nostalgia, I think, for his home country. And he actually wrote the piece in Spillville, Iowa, where there was a Czech community with the oldest Czech church still, I think, in America. So he was, I think, still feeling, you know, the music of his people when he was there.
The joyful music that begins the third movement is said to reflect the song of the scarlet tanager, an American songbird that Dvorak observed in Spillville. But the music's syncopated rhythm also distinctly recalls the Czech folk dances that infuse much of Dvorak's earlier music. Again demonstrating his compositional ingenuity, Dvorak takes this exuberant dance melody and slows it down to a plaintive sigh, thus transforming a joyous evocation of his native Bohemia into melancholy nostalgia.
I think that he wanted to capture the essence of America.
There's not a program to this piece.
I don't think so. I mean, I think without a doubt you hear a train ride in the last movement, which is somewhat programmatic. I mean, that was his mode of transportation across the country. So, you know, the rhythms behind the last movement are certainly reminiscent of a train, with little whistles in the first violin part at the beginning. And then the train will kind of pause and you'll get the sense that you're hearing a landscape or a beautiful horizon, the countryside. But I think other than that, it's more the spirit of America more than anything else.
In order to incorporate the essence of America into his music, Dvorak listened to as much of America's own music as he could during his time in the United States. He primarily immersed himself in African-American spirituals, for which he quickly developed a deep fondness. Dvorak also had invaluable help in getting to know the repertory of spirituals. The African-American composer and singer Henry Thacker Burley, also often referred to as Harry Burley, introduced Dvorak to numerous spirituals, even singing them for him to demonstrate their proper style and character. Burley once wrote about his interaction with Dvorak as follows. Dvorak was living on East 17th Street, near the National Conservatory of Music, that Mrs. Jeanette Thurber had invited him to direct. I was studying harmony, composition, and voice there. Dvorak heard me and asked me to come to his house to sing Negro folk music. I'd accompany myself on the piano. Dvorak especially liked Nobody Knows the Trouble I Seen and Go Down Moses. He asked hundreds of questions about Negro life. He would jump up and ask, did they really sing it that way? In addition to being a revelatory interpreter of spirituals, Burley also made arrangements of them, which have become among the standard editions for generations of singers. This summer, as a lens on Dvorak's America, Music at Menlo will present a set of Henry Burley's spiritual arrangements, the same music that Dvorak heard and absorbed when composing his own American works. Alongside a selection of African-American spirituals, we'll hear a sampling of American song from later in the 20th century by two of this country's greatest composers of vocal music, Samuel Barber and William Bolcom. For Samuel Barber, who lived from 1910 to 1981, this season also marks the composer's centenary year. The program will feature one of Barber's finest song cycles, the Four Songs, Opus 13. Mezzo-soprano Sasha Cook.
I love a lot of Barber, and I think he's should be one of the most celebrated. I think he's very unique among composers because he doesn't really fit into any category. He kind of brings out what he appreciates of the old, but still with a modernism. And the songs, in that same vein, are very lyrical, very vocal, very accessible. Poetry is also wonderful. There are four different poets, and they actually, in terms of performing them, there isn't a narrative or a through line, but they harmonize really well. His prosody is always in the service of the text over the music. I get the sense that the text defines the piece as opposed to coming up with a harmonic world for the poem. Sure on the Shining Night is possibly one of the most famous American songs. And one interesting fact about it is that he loved that it defied understanding. He loved that you couldn't really figure out the text. It has a sort of spirituality in it, but you can't put your finger on it. It definitely makes references to this world, this earth, and another, but it's not very specific. Turn of the opening, the piano has the melody and the voice is sort of hovering above, and there's this nice conversation between man and what is above, kind of exchanging, or where are we exactly?
The vocal portion of the program ends with a set of songs by one of today's most original American musical voices, William Bolcom. Bolcom was born in 1938. His musical pedigree includes studies with the French composers Darius Milhaud and Olivier Messiaen. He began his career writing very rigorous serial music, but in the 1960s he turned towards more popular musical styles, and in particular became a key figure in the revival of ragtime music. His compositional language since then has explored the space in between serious and popular music. With his wife, the mezzo-soprano Joan Morris, Bolcom has become a prominent advocate of American popular song, especially cabaret and other early 20th century styles.
He, as a person, is sort of a comedian.
Sasha Cook.
He is a very jovial, funny, sarcastic person. And I think that comes through. He kind of takes everything lightly, and there's so much humor. He also is he grew up as an improviser at the piano. I can't remember exactly what it was, whether he worked in a hotel or what it was, but he can sit down and in a moment compose a one-page ditty. He's somebody that you could just sit down, you could be a bug on the wall, and you'd have a fantastic time just watching him think. He's a very animated guy.
He was always dressed in black, long black jacket, broad black hat, sometimes a cape.
Black Max is a cabaret song, which he excels in. So I think it's very effective. It's great for somebody who wants to put on an act.
To the big shots of the town, who raised their hats right back, never knew they were bowing to Black Max. I'm talking about tonight in Rotterdam.
The program ends with Dvorak's Opus 97 Viola Quintet, the piece he composed immediately after completing the American Quartet. The Kneisel Quartet, with the violist Max Zach, premiered both works in Boston on January 1, 1894. A review in the New York Times read, "Both compositions are of the kind about which a commentator may write a small volume without exhausting his admiration or fully describing their beauties, or about which he would better content himself with a few short words and a good deal of silent thought." Like the quartet, the quintet reflects Dvorak's absorption of American music in the character of its melodies and spacious textures. Violinist Aaron Keefe.
The whole mood of the piece is sort of idyllic, and it's very joyous and open-hearted, and it's a very like vast piece. It has great melodies in every single movement. Has lots of folk melodies. It's said that the opening of the second movement is actually an imitation of a drum, an Indian drum that he had heard. So it starts out with a very rhythmic figure in the second viola, and it moves around the ensemble. And then the middle of the second movement also has these great solos for the first viola and the first violin. ¶¶
Here's more from that New York Times review of the quintet's premiere. "That spirit of eternal sunshine and music, which Rubinstein acclaims as the soul of Mozart's music, is in every measure. These compositions are not of today, they are of yesterday. They are of the dawn of art, with the freshness of the dew and the voices of the birds in them. They are pure, sweet, wholesome, and from first to last, all through and through, beautiful." One interesting side note about the theme of this movement. Supposedly, one of the projects that Dvorak considered while he was in the United States was to compose a new American national anthem. And the second part of this theme is said to be based on sketches for that project. Listen to this chorale passage. Supposedly, it was originally intended as a setting of the words, "My country, 'tis of thee, sweet land of liberty." The slow movement is a theme and variations, a musical form that's based on a single musical idea, the theme, followed by a series of variations on that theme. In the American Quartet, we heard Dvorak's inventive use of simple melodic materials. The theme and variations form of this movement is an ideal vehicle for that dimension of Dvorak's craft. Each of the five variations reimagines the theme into something new. The New York Times review concludes, "In the finale of the quintet, we are brought to realize that Dr. Dvorak has heard some of our music hall ditties and decided that they are of the people. Here indeed he approaches triviality, but it is the trifling of a genius that has found a new plaything. Whatever may be the general opinion as to the Americanism of these works, it can be safely said that Europe has given us nothing which resembles them in thematic material, and we may be thankful that Dr. Dvorak came to America if he was able to find inspiration here for such lovely compositions." Thank you.